and welcome to AFA, Coffee Stained Notes on Witchcraft. I am your host, Margot, and we're barreling through this Aries season, sometimes on loose wheels, but I think we're going to make it just fine. I hope you all had an enjoyable solar eclipse experience. I myself enjoyed it at home. Nothing crazy took place here. I lit some candles and incense and made some offerings. Spent some time outside during the eclipse. Made some eclipse water, which I'll keep on hand until a need arrives. And I paid some extra close attention to my animals, as they sometimes seem to be affected by celestial events such as these, but all was well. The whole thing really only resulted in me having an extra long work day because of how distracted I was, and I barely got anything completed by the afternoon, but that's okay. I got my work done eventually. Thank you for asking. And the following day was actually really great. I mean, we had amazing weather where I am. I was able to wrap up my work day really quickly, leaving me plenty of time to spend outside, tending to the garden and the chicken coop. And then I was able to try a new recipe for dinner, which turned out kind of amazing. So I've only just discovered, and I'm probably the last one, that Instagram chefs who share their recipes and have a huge following are the real deal. I mean, they kind of have to be, right? Because if they share recipes that kind of suck, I think everyone on social media would be holding them accountable for it. So I've been taking recipes off of Instagram lately, and they've been pretty amazing. I've had numerous meh or so-so experiences with recipes from Pinterest in the past, and I'm just done with that. And was ready to swear off of internet recipes altogether and just stick to my small collection of cookbooks until I realized this. And like I said, I might probably sound really old right now and be the last person to have discovered this or realized this, but I made a whole ass chicken over a bed of like white, red, and purple potatoes and carrots in my Dutch oven on Tuesday. And it was like I didn't even know how to cook chicken before this day. And don't get me wrong, I can cook. I mean, I was raised by a Puerto Rican mom and an Italian stepdad. It's kind of a prerequisite. But this chicken was next level. Anyway, I just sort of felt like everything was falling into place and working out really nicely on that Tuesday. And I just really felt good and in high spirits and just had a really good fucking day. And being as how we just experienced quite a transformative eclipse the day before, you know, I was pretty stoked. So I hope that the rest of you have at least a similar story. Maybe some progress was made or some tension was released, or just a new accomplishment, a new goal set, something that feels a little better than before. That's what I hope for all of you. What else? Leading up to the eclipse, we had an earthquake here in New Jersey on Friday, and a few aftershocks since. That was kind of wild. The last time I remember experiencing an earthquake here was actually, it actually took place in Virginia, but we felt it here. And before that was something that was probably categorized as a tremor from when I was a little kid. So it's not at all common here. And it was big news for that reason, I guess. It was a 4.8. And as far as I've seen and heard, it was not destructive or disastrous in any way. Just kind of a little shock. We were shooketh, literally. And I have to say, between the earthquake, the eclipse, and now there was a meteor which looked like a bright fireball flying over the sky on Wednesday morning, also in New Jersey. All very interesting events, of course. But I have to say, social media, because of those three events, has been extra, extra, extra. And you know I'm talking about the doomsday, rapture, and second coming theorists. Or I should say fanatics. Sorry, not sorry. But honestly, if you're going to deny science and resort to religious and spiritual fear mongering on social media, then you are entertainment at the absolute best. Kind of like how Jerry Springer was entertaining before it got very sad very quickly. And then it becomes concerning. And I know these people aren't even in my audience, but it doesn't matter. I feel compelled to say it, and I cannot stress it enough. Religion or spirituality is not a substitute for real mental health support. Oftentimes, when or if you go to a professional, they may recommend a routine, a system of faith, belief, or spirituality And even maybe a daily ritual as a tool to help with your mental health journey. And spirituality and ritual often fit very nicely into that category and can certainly be helpful. It's helpful for me, but it does not and it cannot take the place of real mental health support, which comes in the form of a certified, educated, and experienced mental health practitioner, full stop. And when this religious or spiritual fear-mongering comes from individuals in politics and government, especially most often from those who don't really seem all that Christ-like to begin with, like at all, then it's not only idiotic and laughable at best, sad and scary at worst, but it's also dangerous and problematic and absolutely unacceptable. And to those individuals, I say, please, find a way to rapture yourself. Thanks. Okay, that was fun. Did I take it too far? I don't think so. Anyway, we are back at it with Fortune and Flora today as we embark on the threes of the tarot. And I've got to say, I'm happy we ended up with this way of going through the minor arcana because I could have split it up into the suits, which would make a whole lot of sense that way as well. And there are books that absolutely explain the minor arcana in that way also. But in this way, we get to take a walk through the numbers and see how each step of the way is expressed as it's influenced by each suit. And I'm really enjoying it so far, and I hope you are too. I think either way of learning the minor arcana has great value, and maybe even after we've gone through it in this manner, why not go back and learn it through the progression of each suit, because it tells a story in that way also. There are so many ways that we can explore and learn and tell stories through these cards, so why not keep exploring and learning while you can, you know? Okay, I'm just geeking out. But we're also going to be taking another look at two plant spirits that are often either confused for one another or grouped together. They are the bright and beautiful calendula and marigold. But first, the threes. So as we transition from the twos to the threes, something of an opening up and a broadening of our world and horizon starts to occur. In a way, things become a little more complex because we are looking away from ourselves and our goals and even the partnerships that we've been concerned with, and consider how other people, other situations, and other concepts start to fall into play. To make this much simpler, I want to read an excerpt from Pathworking the Tarot by Lisa Robertson as she explains it much better than myself. Here we go. As we progress through the minor arcana cards, you will notice a bit of a trend. We start inviting more people, places, and things into our lives. And the threes just got very social. Under the twos, you learned about partnerships, how you work with one another on one other person, thing, or situation at any given time. Here in the threes, we bring in as many people as possible for you to get done what you need to get done. Threes tend to be tactile in nature and are not at all afraid to let down their hair and wear their emotions on their sleeve. Each one of the threes in the minor arcana will share with you a different aspect of the three's personality. And you might notice just from looking at these cards in your deck that they do seem to go from one extreme to another. This is because there is no middle ground in the world of the threes. Balance is not something natural to these cards, yet they will try to create conditions for which they feel more balanced. Through these cards, your interaction with the world will broaden, and you will need to consider what your part in the larger picture of the world really is. In other words, what is the part you came to play, and how does the part join with the parts of others around you? This may lead you to question the intentions you set under the aces. For the most part, you will learn that your goals, dreams, challenges, and blessings aren't as much yours as you think they are. You will start to see how your decisions impact others and how people, places, and things you encounter are interconnected in ways you never stopped to think about. And again, that is from Pathworking the Tarot, Spiritual Guidance and Practical Advice from the Cards by Lisa Robertson. I don't remember how this book came into my radar, but I'm so happy that it did, and I cannot recommend it enough. Okay, so let's begin. How I always like to begin, with numerology. So in numerology, the number three is often associated with creativity, expression, communication, curiosity, optimism, and social interaction. Let's go over these key aspects to help them stick before we dive deeper into the threes of the tarot themselves. So, creativity and expression. The number three is considered highly creative and expressive. It represents the ability to communicate ideas effectively, whether through art, writing, speaking, movement, or other forms of expression. Optimism and enthusiasm. People who are influenced by the number three tend to be optimistic, enthusiastic, and joyful. They have a positive outlook on life, and they're often able to see the bright side of any situation. We all have a couple of these absolute threes in our lives, and in this case, that number is a huge compliment. Social and outgoing. The energy of number three is sociable. Individuals associated with this number enjoy being around others and are sometimes the life of the party. They thrive in social settings and have a natural charm that draws people to them. And they may fall into the category of an extrovert. Although introverts can be very social too when they choose to be, they just need solitude and downtime to recharge a little bit more often. Communication skills. Communication is the key theme for the number three. Those influenced by this number often have excellent communication skills and are adept at expressing themselves verbally and non-verbally. They may excel in fields such as public speaking, writing, or teaching. Creativity in various forms. The creativity of the number three can manifest in different ways, including artistic expression, innovation, and problem solving. People influenced by this number may excel in creative endeavors such as music, painting, design, and even entrepreneurship. Challenges with focus and discipline. So while the number three is associated with creativity and expression, its energy can sometimes be scattered or unfocused. Individuals influenced by this number may struggle with maintaining discipline and may need to work on focusing their energy to achieve their goals. Expression of emotions. Emotions, they play a significant role for those influenced by the number three. They're often in touch with their feelings and may express them openly and passionately. Not all of us can do that. It takes a certain level of vulnerability and expressiveness that may be either innate or learned, but it's something that is unique in many cases. And this is not the same as the optimistic outlook. The number three is linked to optimism and a positive attitude, even in difficult situations. Individuals associated with this number tend to remain hopeful and resilient, especially in the face of adversity, hardship, and grief. And finally, I want to touch on some symbolism in religion, mythology, and even witchcraft, because three holds a lot of significance here. In many pagan traditions, the triple goddess is a deity that is often considered a personification of the moon in its major stages of waxing full and waning, as well as the three stages of a woman's life, where age is concerned, the maiden, the mother and or warrior, and the crone. And this symbolism can also embody the cycles of life, death, and rebirth. The threefold law is a principle in many Wiccan traditions that suggests that whatever energy a person puts out in the world, whether positive or negative, will be returned to them threefold. It's essentially a concept based on the law of cause and effect, and is not one that all witches and practitioners prescribe to. The Trinity symbolism. The number three is often seen as a symbol of unity, balance, and harmony. In some traditions, it represents the union of mind, body, and spirit, or the interconnectedness of the physical, mental, and spiritual realms. In Christianity, the Holy Trinity represents the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And in spellcraft and magical rituals, the number three is frequently utilized. For example, spells might be repeated three times for emphasis or effectiveness. And some rituals involve performing actions, making gestures, or speaking incantations three times three. In astrology, the number three is associated with the third astrological sign, Gemini. Gemini is ruled by Mercury, the planet of communication and versatility, which adds layers of meaning to the number's symbolism. Overall, the significance of the number three in witchcraft varies depending on the specific tradition and belief system, but it often represents concepts of balance, unity, and the cycles of nature. So, we have the number three in numerology representing creativity, communication, optimism, and social interaction. And individuals influenced by the number are often lively, expressive, and able to connect with others on a deep level. And we also have a whole lot of spiritual and symbolic significance linked to the number three as well. So let's take a look at the significance of the number three in tarot. So when we talk about the number three in tarot, we have to go back to the Empress, which is, of course, the third card in the major arcana. Remember, the Fool is zero, the Magician is one, and the High Priestess is two. And now we're looking at the Empress again. The Empress is a powerful symbol of femininity, fertility, creativity, and abundance. She represents nurturing energy, growth, and the natural world. And she encourages you to embrace your creativity, connect with your intuition, and cultivate a sense of abundance in your life. The Empress often represents a time of growth, abundance, and nurturing energy, and reminds us to nurture the things that we love, especially those things that are brought about through creative expression and are pleasurable to the senses. This could mean taking care of yourself if you feel depleted, nurturing your creativity, connecting with nature, or simply expressing your creativity and love in all aspects of your life. Through these things, we bring about growth and abundance in the most soul-enriching way possible. Okay, so let's quickly go over some more associations and correspondences with the number three, and then we'll hit those tarot cards. So three is associated with the element of fire, the planets and or luminaries, Jupiter, Mars, the Moon, Mercury, and Saturn. The zodiac sign, Gemini, the third zodiac sign. The day of the week, Wednesday. And the tarot card, again, the Empress. And some colors here are green, lilac, mauve, and violet. And while I don't really have plant associations with the number three per se, I want to give a nod to three-petaled or three-leaved plants, such as clover, white trillium, the Catalina mariposa lily, the jockey's cap lily, poison ivy, remember, leaves of three, let it be, the jack in the pulpit, and spiderwort. I'm sure I missed some, and you might want to do an exploration in your own local area, or not. It's cool either way, man. But there you have it. Let's talk about the tarot cards themselves, starting with... Let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's start with the Three of Swords. While each of the threes has its own specific focus, they all share the common theme of progress and growth. Whether it's celebrating the bonds of friendship and community, exploring new opportunities and possibilities, or collaborating with others to achieve success, the threes in tarot remind us of the power of connection, vision, and collaboration on our journey towards fulfillment and achievement, even in the wake of heartache. So the Three of Swords, which is ruled by air, is one of the most evocative and challenging cards in the tarot deck. Typically, in the RWS system of tarot, it's depicted as three swords piercing a large red heart against a stormy sky. At its core, the Three of Swords represents emotional pain and suffering, particularly related to loss, betrayal, or disappointment in relationships. The image of the heart pierced by three swords symbolizes the deep wounds inflicted upon the heart and soul, and the card suggests that you may be experiencing profound sadness, grief, or anguish due to a recent breakup, betrayal, or loss. Now, beyond the physical heartache, the Three of Swords also points to mental anguish and inner turmoil. It reflects the mental and emotional toll of painful experiences, such as feelings of betrayal, rejection, and abandonment. Or that you may be struggling to make sense of your emotions or find clarity amidst the chaos of your thoughts. And the card ultimately reminds us that we can achieve this clarity by facing painful truths, releasing and letting go, seeking support, which can help to lead to healing and eventually coming to a place of resilience and growth. Let's expand on these further. So starting with facing painful truths. The Three of Swords encourages you to confront painful truths and acknowledge your feelings, even if they are difficult to bear. It's a reminder that healing cannot begin until you have faced and processed your emotions honestly. Avoiding or repressing your pain will only prolong the suffering. Ugh, right? Gross, but necessary and absolutely cathartic. Release and letting go. So while the Three of Swords is undeniably a card of sorrow, it also carries this message of release and letting go. And that sometimes, in order to heal, you must allow yourself to grieve fully and release the emotional attachments that no longer serve you. The card urges you to surrender to the pain and trust that it is a necessary step on the path to healing. I love that I have a crying dog in the background while I'm reading the Three of Swords. So, this means allowing yourself to feel the feels and process the emotions. Ugh, right, gross, but necessary and absolutely cathartic. This is how we signal to our bodies that we are experiencing something traumatic, but also that we are processing it and that we are working through it, and it's not necessary to go into survival mode, which ultimately will help you from bottling it all up and forcing your body to go into that survival mode, which turns us into slowly dying animals. Whether we like it or not, we have to let ourselves process in order to achieve balance, both mentally and physically. So next is seeking support and healing. During times of heartache and sorrow, it's crucial to seek support from loved ones or professional help if needed. The Three of Swords reminds you that you don't have to face your pain alone. Reaching out to trusted friends, family members, or therapists who can provide comfort, guidance, and support as you navigate through these difficult emotions is an option. And finally, we come to resilience and growth. Despite the pain depicted in the Three of Swords, there is also that underlying message of resilience and growth, like a storm passing through, as sometimes depicted on the card itself. This card reminds you that even the darkest moments will eventually fade, making way for new beginnings and opportunities for personal growth. Embrace the lessons learned from your hardships and trust in your ability to emerge stronger and wiser. Now, I want to read a couple excerpts from WTF is Tarot and How Do I Do It by Bikara Wintner. I decided on two of the four threes before this recording, and the Three of Swords is one of them, along with the Three of Cups, of course. So here is the Three of Swords. Three of Swords, the first cut is the deepest. Searing, immediate, overwhelming pain characterizes this infamous card. Traditionally depicted as a heart pierced by three swords, the experience of the Three of Swords is always difficult. Not only are we feeling extreme heartache, but it is typically at the hands of people we trusted. Being cheated on, backstabbed, disappointed, or undermined could all bring about the acute distress of the Three of Swords. The wreckage of this card is not in the transgression itself, but in rather the discovery of it. The shattering aftermath of being wronged can feel like an unending nightmare, and there is little that can be done for people going through it. However, it will not feel like this forever. You will get through it and feel differently, even if you can't imagine either happening at the moment. You will share your story with someone else at some point, and it will help them to feel less alone. And then, and only then, will you understand why you had to endure all that shittiness. But until then, it just fucking sucks. And no one and nothing but time is going to make it better. Okay, so in summary, the Three of Swords is a card that speaks to the depths of human suffering and heartache. But it also offers hope for healing, transformation, and renewal. It encourages you to face your pain with courage and compassion, knowing that it is an integral part of the journey toward wholeness and healing. Okay, we are going to go and move on to the Three of Cups now because we need it. Such a beautiful card, and the Cups, of course, is ruled by water. The Three of Cups is a joyful and celebratory card in the tarot. It typically depicts three figures raising their cups in a toast as they dance together in a circle. They exude the energy of joy, friendship, and deep bonds, and seem to be surrounded by abundance and happiness. I've seen cards that depict a coven of witches engaging in joyful ritual, what looks like three generations, or what could also be the representation of the maiden, mother, and crone, or just a small group that is undeniably close and celebrating that closeness. So we have some key meanings here, and they are celebration and rejoicing. At its core, the Three of Cups represents celebration, camaraderie, and shared joy. The image of three people coming together in a joyful gathering suggests a sense of unity, connection, and mutual appreciation and support. This may appear when you are experiencing moments of happiness, harmony, or fulfillment in your relationships or social life, or maybe telling you who to go to for love, support, and understanding in certain situations, or possibly to seek this kind of camaraderie out, bringing me to friendship and community. The Three of Cups emphasizes the importance of friendship, community, and social connection. It suggests that you are surrounded by supportive and like-minded individuals who bring positivity and laughter into your life and encourage you to cherish your relationships and find joy in spending time with loved ones. Gratitude and appreciation. The Three of Cups invites you to cultivate an attitude of gratitude and appreciate the blessings in your life. Take a moment to reflect on all that you've accomplished and the relationships that bring meaning and fulfillment to your life. Expressing gratitude can deepen your connections with others and enhance your overall sense of well-being. And in addition to social connections, the Three of Cups is associated with creativity, self-expression, and artistic pursuits, suggesting that you may find inspiration and fulfillment through creative collaboration or by sharing your talents with others. It's time to embrace opportunities to express yourself creatively and explore new ways to connect with your inner passions and interests. And finally, a sense of belonging. This card can indicate a feeling of belonging and acceptance in an environment where you feel open and safe in sharing your emotions, your hopes, your dreams, your aspirations, etc. In this setting and among this group, you can celebrate your successes and engage in rituals that enrich your life. So basically, a coven. At least that's how I think a coven should feel. And that's how my coven feels. And I'm going to read again for the last time from WTF is Tarot and How Do I Do It. I chose these two cards without realizing that they were going to be back to back with the current order that I'm sticking to. But the Three of Cups does feel like a nice palate cleanser after the Three of Swords. So it's okay. Okay. When the squad gets together, we enter into the warm, content, glittery cocoon of the Three of Cups. Who do you love the most? Who do you get together with and feel like all is right, like nothing is missing, like the world could end right then, and it would be sort of fine? Whether you're turning up, staying in, working, devastated, experiencing a crisis, or doing nothing, it is better and easier simply because these people are with you. A card that speaks to a soul-level connection between people. It shows up to tell us we are surrounded by people who have our back, who want to show up for us, and who will be there through thick and thin. Let them in. Allow the nourishment that can be delivered only by true friendship. Fully accepting love can be an emotional and scary endeavor, but if there was ever a time to experiment with it, it is here with these people. Have fun. Feel blessed. You are never alone if you don't choose to be. So overall, the Three of Cups is a card of celebration, friendship, and shared joy. It encourages you to embrace the connections and relationships that bring happiness and fulfillment into your life, while also expressing gratitude for the abundance that surrounds you. This card reminds you to celebrate life's moments, both big and small, and to nurture the bonds of friendship and community that enrich your journey. Okay, let's move on to the Three of Wands. Wands being ruled by fire. The Three of Wands is a card in the tarot deck that often symbolizes creation, looking forward to something with optimism, a mission, enterprise, trade, or commerce, expansion, foresight, and the initial stages of progress. What am I looking at? Nope, the wrong card. Okay, so the Three of Wands is typically depicted as a lone figure, typically shown as youthful, looking out over a cliff or a horizon with his back to the viewer. Three wands stand firmly planted in the ground on either side of him as he surveys the vastness before him. Here are some keywords and meanings for the Three of Wands card, starting with foresight and vision. So the Three of Wands represents the ability to look ahead and envision future possibilities. This imagery suggests that you have a clear vision of your goals and aspirations, and you're ready to take action to bring them to fruition. Exploration and expansion. This card encourages you to explore new horizons and expand your horizons. It suggests that you are entering a phase of growth and development, where you have the opportunity to explore new ideas, opportunities, or ventures. And it invites you to step out of your comfort zone and embrace the unknown with courage and confidence. Initiative and action from a grounded and strategic place. While the figure in the Three of Wands is standing still, they seem ready to take action. But the presence of the wands planted in the ground indicates that there is a plan and suggests that you have laid the groundwork for your plans and are now prepared to move forward strategically and with determination and initiative. At this point, you should trust in your abilities and take the necessary steps to pursue your goals with conviction and look forward with a sense of adventure, because the initial steps that you've already taken, the planning, have shown promise. Anticipation and preparation. The Three of Wands often appears where you're in, when you're in a phase of anticipation and preparation for what lies ahead, and you may be waiting for the right moment to launch a project, embark on a journey, or seize an opportunity. Use this time wisely to prepare yourself mentally, emotionally, and practically for the challenges and opportunities that may arise. And welcome new opportunities, because the future holds vast potential, like what the figure in the card is looking out over. So now is the time to let your ambition and your creativity shine. And in some interpretations, the card encourages you to leverage your connections and build partnerships with like-minded individuals who can support you on your journey toward success. This is another way to look at those new opportunities. So overall, the Three of Wands is a card of foresight, initiative, and expansion. It encourages you to trust your vision, take proactive steps to pursue your goals, and embrace the opportunities for growth and expansion that lie ahead. By harnessing your creativity, your determination, and your willingness to explore new possibilities, you can chart a course towards a brighter and more fulfilling future. And finally, last but certainly not least, is the Three of Pentacles. Pentacles, of course, ruled by Earth. The Three of Pentacles is all about collaboration, teamwork, cooperation, contribution, and skilled craftsmanship. The imagery in the card typically depicts a stonemason consulting with two others while working on a project. Most often, it's a portion of a cathedral with three beautifully crafted pentacles over an archway. The two other figures are sometimes a monk who is overseeing the project and an architect who holds the plans for the project. The imagery implies that they are all contributing in their own way to this project. So here are some key words and meanings for the Three of Pentacles. Again, collaboration and cooperation. The Three of Pentacles represents the value of working together toward a common goal and building a foundation for the future. It suggests that success can be achieved through collaboration and the combined efforts of multiple individuals. This is A+ teamwork. The development of skill and expertise. The Three of Pentacles also symbolizes growth in skill and craftsmanship and mastery of one's craft, which often comes as a result of working with and learning from others. The figures in the card are often portrayed as skilled artisans or professionals who take pride in their work and strive for excellence in everything they do. Out of this, they will all be successful and may all walk away having gained new skills, new knowledge, and a new level of mastery in their own crafts. Attention to detail. In addition to skill and expertise, the Three of Pentacles emphasizes the importance of attention to detail and meticulous planning. The figures in the card are focused on a task at hand, carefully considering every aspect of the project to ensure its success. And this card reminds you to pay attention to the finer points and not overlook any details that could impact the outcome of your endeavors. It could be the pulling together of resources. Even when you're working on a solo project all by yourself, there still may be the need for collaboration. The Three of Pentacles suggests that you will need to pull together your visions, your skills, your knowledge, and your resources in order to successfully complete a project that you can feel proud of. And in a non-solo project, this will mean leaning on others who have the expertise that you need in order to see a project through. And this requires you to be thoughtful and deliberate in the planning phase, which will lead to a solid foundation and long-term success. So building a solid foundation, we come to that. Like a sturdy structure being built by the figures in the card, the Three of Pentacles encourages you to focus on building a solid foundation for your future endeavors. Lay the groundwork for your goals, invest time and energy into developing your skills, and surround yourself with supportive individuals who share your vision and your values. And finally, long-term success. The work is not yet done, but the Three of Pentacles is often associated with the long-term success that is sure to follow a successful collaboration. In this way, the card assures that all of your team's hard work will pay off in the long run. Trust in your abilities. Stay focused on your goals. Continue to put in the effort needed to achieve success and surround yourselves with the right people for the job. So to sum it up, the Three of Pentacles is a card of collaboration, teamwork, and the coming together of resources, craftsmanship, and long-term success on the horizon. It reminds you that by working together with others, leveraging your skills and expertise, and paying attention to the details, you can achieve great things and build a solid foundation for the future. Trust in your abilities, stay committed to your goals, and above all, embrace the opportunities for growth and collaboration that may come your way. And so that's the threes. We're going to move on to the flora portion of this episode, but stay tuned till the end because I'm going to share a nice little spell that will call for the Three of Cups. Okay, so some of you may remember that a while back, all the way back when we covered the Emperor, which is number 4 in the major arcana, I covered both Ginger and Galangal for two reasons. One being that some, not all, practitioners tend to use these two interchangeably to the point that there may be some confusion about their differences. And I wanted to clear that up. And again, because the notion of substitutions and interchangeability on plant and herbal magic, which isn't exactly a big no-no all the time. For example, if I was planning on performing a ritual in honor of the moon or a lunar deity, and I have both jasmine and gardenia on hand, both will be appropriate in this case, and I can use either or both. But that does not mean that they are the same or fully interchangeable, because they both have other aspects and other properties that we should learn about. So yes, if you know the type of magic you want to work and what energies you'd like to help you strengthen your spell, then by all means, use the plant ally or allies that bring forth those energies. Just so long as we don't also go and decide that they are the same or that they do the same things. So the second reason why I put both in the episode together was to highlight their uniqueness from one another. And I'm going to do that again with calendula and marigold today. They are very often confused for each other or thrown together into the same category, which yes, they do come from the same family. But so do belladonna and potato and tobacco and eggplant, all quite different from one another. So let's dive into both calendula and marigold. Also, as you can tell by now, I say calendula. I know a lot of people say calendula, but it's just how I started first saying it, and it is stuck that way. And I'm sorry if it's driving you crazy. So I say that a lot. So calendula, or calendula officinalis, is often referred to as pot marigold, which is probably where a lot of the confusion begins. And marigold, or tagetes, which is the genus, as there are about 50 species of marigolds, have been used for medicinal purposes for centuries. And while they are different plants, both have a rich history of medicinal use in various cultures around the world. So calendula has been used in traditional medicine for its anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, and wound healing properties. Ancient Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, and Indians used calendula preparations for treating various skin ailments, wounds, and infections. I make a calendula-infused jojoba oil, and it's second to none. It's an incredible combination. And so calendula is commonly used in topical preparations, such as creams, ointments, and salves, for treating minor skin irritations, cuts, burns, bruises, and rashes because of its anti-inflammatory and antiseptic properties. And that helps soothe the skin and promote healing. It's often included in skincare products for its moisturizing and skin-soothing properties, in lotions, balms, and serums to hydrate the skin, reduce redness, and improve overall skin health. Calendula can also be taken orally as a tea or tincture for its digestive benefits, because it is believed to support digestive health, reduce inflammation in the digestive tract, and alleviate symptoms of gastrointestinal disorders, such as ulcers and gastritis, soothing on both the outside and the inside. And for some, calendula is thought to have immune-boosting properties due to its antimicrobial properties, and may help support the body's natural defenses against infections and illness. Now, marigold has various species, including Tagetes erecta and Tagetes petula, also referred to as African marigold and French marigold, that have been used in traditional medicine for their antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory and wound-healing properties as well. Marigold preparations are often used topically to treat skin conditions, such as acne, eczema, dermatitis, and fungal infections. And its antiseptic and anti-inflammatory properties help reduce inflammation, soothe irritation, and promote healing. Sound familiar? However, marigold plants also contain compounds that are effective natural insect repellents. They're often planted in gardens to deter pests and mosquitoes, making them an excellent companion plant in your vegetable garden. And marigold extracts may be used in insect repellent sprays and lotions. And as far as ingestion goes, not all species of marigold are safe to ingest, which is why we don't see this plant used quite as often in herbalism and natural medicine as we do with calendula. So both calendula and marigold continue to be valued for their medicinal properties with slight variations of use and are commonly found in herbal remedies, skincare products, and natural health benefits. However, it's important to consult a healthcare professional before using any herbal remedies, especially if you have underlying health conditions or are taking medications. So what's the difference here? Because we have two plants that are both commonly referred to as marigold and both belong to the Asteraceae family, but they are very distinct plants with some differences in appearance, medicinal properties, and magical properties. Here are a few differences between calendula and marigold. Their appearance. So calendula has bright orange or yellow flowers that have a daisy-like appearance. The petals are typically larger and broader compared to those of other marigold species, and the leaves are lance-shaped and slightly hairy. Marigolds have smaller, bushier flowers with vibrant colors, ranging from yellow and orange to red and maroon, and the petals are much narrower and more tightly packed compared to those of calendula. As far as their medicinal properties go, calendula is valued for its anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antifungal, and wound-healing properties, as we've covered, and it is commonly used in topical preparations for treating minor skin irritations, cuts, burns, bruises, and rashes. Calendula is also used for oral health and digestive issues. Marigold species are valued for their antimicrobial, anti-inflammatory, and wound-healing properties, and they're also sometimes used topically to treat skin conditions such as acne, eczema, and fungal infections, though not as commonly as calendula, and only specific species are applicable. And marigolds are also used as natural insect repellents, but it's a no-no on ingestion. So we don't have any culinary use for marigold, as we said, but calendula petals are edible and can be used fresh or dried in salads, soups, stews, and herbal teas. They add color and a subtle, slightly spicy flavor to dishes. And where we are seeking cultural significance, marigolds tend to stand out. They do not have any significant culinary use, like I said, but they do have some cultural significance in various traditions and are used in religious ceremonies, rituals, and festivals around the world. They're also used as offerings, decorations, and adornments during celebrations and ceremonies, which we'll get to. And as far as growth habits go, calendula is an annual plant that is easy to grow and often cultivated in gardens for its medicinal and ornamental value. It prefers full sun and well-drained soil and blooms throughout the growing season. Marigolds, on the other hand, are annual or perennial plants that thrive in warm climates and are often grown as ornamental flowers in gardens, landscapes, and containers. They're easy to grow, low maintenance, and attract pollinators, such as bees and butterflies, while warding off pests that may like to feast on your garden crop. And marigolds will bloom well into the fall, up to the first frost, which is why they're associated with fall celebrations and those that honor the dead, and are even associated with some underworld deities. I keep potted marigolds, as well as lavender, rosemary, and mint, around my chicken enclosure during the warm months for all the pest control and the wonderful smells they can offer. And the chickens love to pick at the rosemary and the lavender, too. So they look different. They have different growing patterns and have slightly differing medicinal uses, although calendula is much more widely used. And they even interact differently with other plants and both pollinators and garden pests. And yet, they are both sometimes referred to by the common name marigold. Language is weird. So let's look at folklore and mythology, if there is any, shall we? Let's start with calendula. Have you ever heard of the legend of Mary's Gold? One of the most well-known folklore tales associated with calendula is the legend of Mary's Gold, which sounds a lot like marigold, doesn't it? According to the legend, the Virgin Mary hung her son's clothes on a calendula bush to dry while fleeing from King Herod. The flowers were said to have taken on the golden hue of the sunlight, thus earning the name Mary's Gold. Marigold. And in the Victorian language of flowers, calendula is associated with gratitude, sympathy, and remembrance, and it's often included in floral arrangements and bouquets to express appreciation and affection. Now, marigold, particularly Tagetes erecta, have deep cultural religious significance in Aztec mythology and traditions. In ancient Aztec rituals and ceremonies, marigolds were used as offerings to the gods, particularly to the goddess Mictlantecuhtli, the Lady of the Dead. From here is where they got their name Cempasúchil, an Aztec word meaning flower of 20 petals. And in the Victorian language of flowers, again, marigolds are often associated with warmth, joy, and optimism, making them popular choices for bouquets and floral arrangements. Now, these little bits of folklore and mythology highlight both plants' associations with spirituality, healing, and the cycles of life and death. So let's finally take a look at their plant spirit abilities in the realm of magic and witchcraft. Shall we? Yes, we shall. Okay. Because they do, in fact, have some overlapping uses in magic, and there are some spells that could benefit from you using either or both, but there are some differences too, of course. In fact, I have a stack of 5 books on plant magic next to me, and 2 of them have an entry for calendula and not marigold, 2 of them have an entry for marigold and not calendula, and the last one didn't have either. So if that doesn't tell you anything about their magical differences, then I guess I'm about to right now. Let's do it. Calendula. In many folk traditions, calendula is considered a symbol of good luck and prosperity and is associated with happiness and love. But in most modes of magical practice, it is primarily associated with healing magic, both physical and emotional. It's often used in spells and rituals for promoting physical health, speeding up recovery from illness or injury, and soothing skin ailments. Calendula's gentle and nurturing energy makes it ideal for healing rituals, especially those focused on self-care and self-love. Protection magic. Oftentimes, a practical application for health and healing can result in a magical application for protection from harm, and that is what is happening here with calendula. Because it is not traditionally considered a protection or protective herb, its healing properties can indirectly support protection magic by promoting overall well-being and vitality. Calendula can be used in spells and rituals for spiritual protection by strengthening the body's natural defenses and promoting energetic balance. And some practitioners may have used the petals as a protection against nightmares. And this is probably connected to its occasional use in cleansing and purification, because calendula can also be used in rituals to remove negative energy and promote spiritual clarity. Its purifying properties help cleanse the aura and create a protective barrier against psychic attacks or unwanted influences. Mostly, calendula's warm and comforting energy makes it suitable for spells and rituals focused on emotional healing, comfort, and support. And it can be used to ease emotional pain, promote inner peace, and provide a sense of nurturing and reassurance during times of stress and sorrow. So let's talk about marigolds. Now, marigold, on the other hand, is traditionally associated with protection magic and is often used in spells and rituals for spiritual protection, warding off negative energy, and repelling malevolent forces. Marigold's fiery energy and vibrant color make it a potent ally for creating energetic shields and boundaries. Marigold is also known for its cheerful and uplifting energy, making it ideal for spells and rituals focused on joy, happiness, and optimism. And it can be used to enhance mood, lift spirits, and attract abundance and good fortune into one's life. Marigold's vibrant colors and bold energy make it a powerful tool for stimulating creativity and inspiration. And it can be used in spells and rituals to ignite passion, fuel creative projects, and overcome creative blocks. Marigold's fiery energy encourages boldness, confidence, and self-expression. And also harvest and abundance magic. Marigold's association with the harvest season and its abundance of flowers make it a natural choice for spells and rituals related to abundance, prosperity, and fertility. And it can be used to attract wealth, success, and bountiful blessings into one's life, especially during times of harvest or abundance. But it's also associated with the season of dying, as it will continue to bloom until the first frost, well after the harvest is complete. That is why we see its association with some underworld deities, and it's as much a staple in autumn decorations as summer, being in the Asteraceae family, which is the sunflower family. So both calendula and marigold are said to be able to heal and comfort the heart when picked at noon, when the sun is its brightest and its hottest. And some folk beliefs hold that carrying either of these blossoms in your pocket will allow justice to smile favorably upon you. Both calendula and marigold are believed to enhance psychic abilities and intuition, and you can use calendula or marigold petals in divination practices, such as scrying or tarot readings, to deepen your connection to your intuition and spiritual guidance. And it is said by some to be able to open the doors between realms. And finally, both calendula and marigold flowers can be used as wonderful offerings on altars or sacred spaces to honor deities, spirits, or ancestors, especially those with a connection to the flowers, their healing abilities, their cultural or traditional significance, or even the seasons of summer and autumn. So to sum it up, while both calendula and marigold have overlapping uses in magic and witchcraft, they each bring their own unique energies and qualities to rituals and spells. Calendula is associated with healing, comfort, and purification, while marigold is associated with protection, joy, creativity, and abundance, and death. By understanding these differences, practitioners can choose the herb that best aligns with their intentions and desired outcomes in their magical workings. And they can also gain a better understanding of these unique plant spirits and nurture a relationship that is so much more valuable and beneficial than just another ingredient on a recipe or substitution list. Okay, before I let you go, I want to share a quick spell that will require your Three of Cups card. Okay, so this is for, this is coming to you from 365 Tarot Spells, Creating the Magic in Each Day by Sasha Graham. Love this book. This spell is to attract positive people. Here we go. You will need 2 cups of chamomile and or calendula tea, some honey, and your Three of Cups. All right. Sticky honey is used in drawing and attraction spells. Its sweetness brings things we desire to us. Chamomile and calendula both are sacred herbs that are bright and have a cheerful flavor containing the qualities of people you'd like to attract. Jupiter, the planet of luck and expansion, also helps attract upbeat people into your life. Prepare 2 cups of infused tea, add honey, take 1 cup for yourself, and place 1 at the seat next to you. This is an offering to your future friends. Place the 3 of Cups card before you. Visually or mentally enter the card. Feel the warmth of good feelings surrounding you. Feel the celebration and camaraderie of being among people who make you feel good. See their cups lifted in the air and then feel how high other people can bring you when they shine the light on your positive qualities. Return the love. The 3 figures inside the card are like flowers in a garden. Each carries unique beauty and talent. They inspire one another to do better and be greater. Each member of the circle is better for knowing the others. Friends with warm hearts and good intentions are heading toward you as you work this spell. Contemplate the card as you finish your tea, taking your time and enjoying the space of friendship. When your cup is empty, take the 2nd cup and pour as a libation outside of your home while repeating the following incantation. 3 of Cups with love and light bring wonderful people to my sight. My circle surrounds me, honest and true, a sweet, delightful witch's brew. Friends come to me, come quick, come soon, find you by the light of the moon. And that is your attract positive people spell. All right, that is all that I have for you today. So please be well and have an amazing weekend. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of A is for Agrimony, Coffee Stained Notes on Witchcraft. If you like what you've been hearing, please drop me a review wherever you're listening. If you'd like some more content, please go to aisforagrimony.com, where you can find my blog, episode archive, spells and rituals, the Living Grimoire, and soon to come, the Coven Shop. You can follow me on Instagram at @A_is_for_agrimony, that's an underscore in between each word, over on Threads under the same exact handle, or you can like my Facebook page at facebook.com/aisforagrimony. Want to contact me? Shoot an email to reachmargo@aisforagrimony.com. And if you're interested in some exclusive bonus content, you can join the community over on Patreon at patreon.com/aisforagrimony, where I share early release, unedited video format episodes, weekly collective card readings, monthly spells, occasional bonus content, and more to come. Again, thank you for listening, be well, and have an amazing weekend.